Chapter 47. Applying the last touches of coal around her eyes, Caldrosa Wynne looked deep into the mirror.
I can do this. For Toman. She couldn't have said why, but she wanted to look perfect tonight.
Maybe it was just that tonight would be her last night. Her last night whoring. Or her last night, period. The costume was pure fantasy, of course. A Sethe woman would never wear such a thing on deck. But for tonight, it was perfect. The trousers were so tight that she hadn't even been able to get them on until Daedra had laughingly told her that she couldn't wear underclothes beneath them.
But you can see right through them.
And your point is? Oh. For some reason, they exposed not just her ankles, but even her calves, horrifying. While the blouse was just as tight and sheer, with a lacy flounce at the wrists, ridiculous. And down the front, an open V that reached to her navel. Buttons on the shirt suggested it could be closed, but even if Caldrosa could have stretched the tiny piece of fabric over her slender frame, she tried. There were no buttonholes. Mama Kay had been very pleased with Master Picun's work. She insisted that being scantily clad was sexier than naked. Tonight, Caldrosa didn't mind. If she had to run, she'd be harder to grab in this than in skirts. She came into the foyer, and soon the other girls came out of their rooms. Everyone was working tonight, except for Bev, who was too scared. Bev was pretending to be sick and was staying in her room all night. Caldrosa almost panicked when she saw them. All of them looked fantastic. Every one of them had spent extra time on makeup and hair and clothes.
By Porous Spear.
The Caladorans would notice. They'd have to notice. Her sweetmate, Daedra, who'd saved her more than once by calling for bashers when she heard Caldrosa scream her code word, smiled at her.
"Here goes nothing, huh?" Daedra said.
Daedra looked like a new woman. Though barely 17, she'd been a successful prostitute before the invasion, and tonight wasn't the first time that Caldrosa saw why she had done so well. The woman glowed. She didn't care if she died. "You ready?" Caldrosa asked, knowing it was a dumb question. Their floor was going to be opened to clients in just a few minutes.
"So ready, I've told all my girlfriends at the other brothels."
Caldrosa froze.
"Are you insane? You'll get us all killed."
"Didn't you hear?"
Daedra asked quietly, her face somber.
"Hear what?"
"The Paleys killed Jarl."
The breath whooshed out of Caldrosa. If she'd held on to any slim hope for the future, it had been because of Jarl. Jarl and his radiant face, his talk of expelling the Caladorans and going legitimate, of building 100 bridges across the Plith and eliminating all the laws that bound the Warrenborn and the Slaveborn and former slaves and the impoverished to the city's west side. Jarl had spoken of a new order, and when he spoke, it sounded possible. She'd felt powerful in a way she never had before. She'd hoped.
And now Jarl was dead?
"Don't cry," Daedra said. "You'll mess up your makeup. You'll get all of us crying."
"Are you sure?"
"The whole city's talking about it," Shell said.
"I saw Mama Kay's face. It's true," Daedra said.
"So you really think any light skirt's going to rat us out to them after they killed Jarl?"
The last door on the landing opened, and Bev came out wearing her bull dancer costume, ponytails wired up into twin horns, midriff bare, and short pants. The dancer's knife at her belt didn't look like the usual blunted blade. Bev was pale, but resolute.
"Jarl was always kind to me.
And I'm not going to listen to that damned prayer of theirs one more time."
"He was good to me, too,"
another girl said,
choking back tears. "Don't start," Daedra said. "No tears. We're gonna do this."
"For Jarl," another girl said.
"For Jarl," the rest of the girls repeated. A bell tinkled that told the girls their guests were coming.
"I told some other girls, too," Shell said. "I hope that's all right. As for me, I get Fat Ass. He killed my first sweet mate."
"I get Carrick," Jillian said. Under her makeup, her right eye was still a puffy yellow.
"Little Dick's mine."
"Neddard!"
"I don't care who I get," Caldrosa said. She clenched her jaw so hard it hurt. "But I'm taking two. The first one's for Toman, the second's for Jarl."
The other girls looked at her.
"Two?" Daedra asked. "How are you gonna do two?"
"I'll do what I have to. I'm getting two."
"Fuck it," Shell said. "Me too, but I'm taking Fat Ass first, just in case."
"I'm in," Jillian said. "Now shut up, we're on." The first man up the stairs was Captain Burl Lager. Caldrosa's heart stopped beating. She hadn't seen him since she'd moved into the Craven Dragon to escape him. She stood frozen until he came to stand in front of her.
"Well, if it isn't my little pirate bitch," Burl said.
She couldn't move. Her tongue was lead in her mouth. Burl saw her fear and stuck out his chest.
"See, I knew you were a whore before you did. I could tell you liked it the very first time I banged you in front of your husband. And here you are."
He smiled and was obviously disappointed that none of his sycophants were with him to laugh.
"So," he said finally, "you happy to see me?"
Inexplicably, the fear vanished. It was just gone. Caldrosa smiled impishly.
"Happy?" she said, grabbing the front of his trousers.
"Oh, you have no idea." And she led him to a room. For Toman. For Jarl. That night, a gray-haired cripple climbed to the roof of the manse that had briefly belonged to Roth Ursul, but was now infested with hundreds of rabbits. He balanced on his crutch in the moonlight and screamed into the night.
"Come, Jarl, come and see, come and listen!"
As the rabbits gathered to watch the madman, a wind kicked up off the plith. Tears shining in his eyes like stars, the general began to recite a dithyram of hate and loss. He sang a threnody to Jarl, a dirge for the hope of a better life. The words swirled with the wind, and not a few rabbits felt that not only the winds, but the spirits of the murdered were gathering to the general's voice, rising with the cadence of vengeance. The humble general screamed and shook his crutch at the heavens, as if it were a symbol of every rabbit's impotence and despair. He screamed at the very moment the winds fell still. The warrens answered. A scream rose. A man's scream. As if released by that sound, the winds roared. Lightning cracked against the castle looming to the north, and the light painted the general black against the sky. Black clouds covered the moon, and rain lashed down. The rabbits heard the general laughing, crying, defying the lightning, waving his crutch at the heavens as if conducting a wild chorus of rage. Screams rose that night from the Craven Dragon as never before. Women who had refused to scream for their clients before now screamed loudly enough to make up for all their previous silence. Beneath those screams, the grunts and whimpers and soft cries and begging of dying men were never heard. 40 Caladorans died at the Craven Dragon alone. Mama Kay's plot had been for one brothel, after which she planned to smuggle the girls out of the city. It was supposed to make the Caladorans think twice about brutalizing the working girls. But the plan, whipped up by the news of Jarl's death, spread like wildfire. One brothel owner invented a holiday as an excuse to serve lots of ale cheap to get his customers as drunk as possible. He called it Nocta Himata. The night of passion, he claimed, smiling broadly at his guests. Another brothel owner who'd worked with Jarl for years confirmed that it was an old Cenarian tradition. The night of abandon, he said. Across the city, fueled by drugged food and excessive drink, brothels celebrated an orgy unlike any ever seen. The air filled with shrieks and screams and wild ululations, screams of terror, screams of vengeance, frenzied screams of bloodlust and blood debts repaid. Men and women, and even the small men and women in children's bodies who were the guild rats, killed with savagery too terrible to comprehend. Bereaved men, women, and children stood over bloodied Caladoran corpses and called upon the ghosts of their dead beloved to see what vengeance they had wrought. Called upon Jarl to see what retribution they had exacted from the flesh of the enemy. Dogs howled, and horses panicked at the feral smells of blood and sweat and fear and pain. Running men and women poured through the streets in every direction. There was too much blood for even the torrents of rain to wash away. The gutters ran red. Soldiers arrived to find the doors of brothels adorned with dozens of small trophies, one cut from each rapist's body. But every brothel was empty of all but corpses. In the early hours of the morning, gangs of aggrieved husbands and boyfriends tore apart the drugged Caladorans who had escaped the brothels and were wandering, trying to find their way out of the warrens. Even the fully armed and lucid units sent to investigate wandered into ambushes. Rocks were thrown from rooftops in storms. Archers picked off soldiers from a distance, and every time the soldiers charged, the rabbits who had spent months learning to disappear did it again. It was like attacking ghosts, and every narrow, twisting alley had a perfect place for an ambush. The Caladorans who entered the warrens didn't leave. That night, the God King lost 621 soldiers, 74 officers, 3 brothel owners who had acted as informants, and 2 witches. The rabbits didn't lose a soul. Forever after, both sides would call it the Nocta Himata, the Night of Blood. Logan woke. He didn't move. He just let the fact wash over him until he was sure it was true. He was alive. Somehow, he had survived unconsciousness and delirium, here. He remembered snippets of Nasher roaring, standing over him, of Lily putting a damp rag over his forehead. Between those fragments, like pus in a suppurating wound, were nightmares, garish beasts of his lost life, of dead women and gloating, ghoulish Caladoran faces. When he moved, he knew he wasn't out of the woods. He had a kitten's strength. Opening his eyes, he struggled to sit up. Around the hole, he heard muttering. It sounded like everyone else was as surprised as he was. People who got sick down here never survived. A meaty hand grabbed him and pulled him to a sitting position. It was Nasher, grinning his fool's grin. A moment later, he was kneeling, hugging Logan, crushing the wind out of him.
"Easy, Nash," Lily said. "Let him go."
Logan was surprised when Nasher actually let go of him immediately. Nasher didn't listen to anyone but him. Lily smiled at him.
"Good to see you're back."
"I see you've made a new friend," Logan said,
feeling jealous and guilty for it. She dropped her voice.
"You should have seen him, King. He was magnificent."
She grinned her gap-toothed smile and rubbed Nasher's knobby knee. He closed his eyes, his filed teeth showing as he smiled broadly.
"You did good, didn't you, Nash?"
"Yes,"
he said, his voice rising oddly through the middle of the word. Logan almost fell over. It was the first time he'd heard Nasher speak.
"You can talk?"
he asked. Nasher smiled.
"Hey, whore!"
Finn called from across the hall. He had uncoiled most of his sinew rope and was adding a newly braided section to it. Logan saw that there were now only 7 holers left.
"Time for you to get back to work."
"You'll wait till I'm good and ready," Lily said.
"I haven't let any of them have a throw since you got sick,"
she told Logan.
"What's that sound?"
Logan asked. He hadn't noticed it at first because it was so constant, but there was some sort of chipping sound and a low, murmuring echo down into the hole from elsewhere in the maw. Before she could answer, Logan felt something shift in the air. The holers looked at each other, but every face was blank. Something had changed, but no one could tell what. Logan felt weaker, sicker. The air seemed thicker than it had before, oppressive. He was once more aware of the stench and the foulness of the hole, smelling it for the first time in months. He felt as if he were for the first time aware of the sludge covering the surface of life. He was being covered in filth, and there was no escape. Every breath filled him with more toxins. Every movement stroked more filth along his body, ground oil deeper into every pore. Just to exist was to let that scum be pressed into him, to let darkness pierce his skin so deeply that it tattooed him, making filth forever part of him. So anyone who ever saw him would see every evil he'd ever done, every unworthy thought he'd ever entertained. He was barely even aware of the noise clattering through the maw. Prisoners were screaming, begging for mercy. The screams spread and rose in pitch and desperation as the prisoners, closer and closer to the hole, started joining the screaming. Beneath the high-pitched walls, Logan heard that clattering sound again, as of iron wheels grinding against rock. Around the hole, hardened murderers were curled into the fetal position, holding their hands over their ears, pressing up against the wall. Only Tenser and Finn didn't cower. Finn looked to be in raptures, his ropes lying limp on his lap, his face upturned. Tenser saw Logan staring.
"Kali has come," Tenser said.
"What is it?" Logan asked. He could barely move. He wanted to throw himself in the hole to end the horror and despair.
"She is God. The very stones here drip with 1,000 years of pain and hatred and despair. The entire maw is like a gem of evil, and here is where Kali will make her home, in the blackest depths of unmined darkness." Then he began chanting, over and over.
"Kalivas, Kalivos ras en me, Kali me virtu rapt recu virtum defite."
Tats was next to Tenser, and he seized the man.
"What are you saying? Stop it!"
He grabbed Tenser by the throat and dragged him to the edge of the hole. Instantly, black webs sprang up all over Tenser's arms, and Tat's eyes bulged. He choked, his mouth worked, and his throat made little gasping sounds. He stumbled back from the hole, releasing Tenser, and fell to his knees. Tat's face was red, veins bulging in his neck and forehead, and he gasped for no apparent reason. Then he dropped to the ground, heaving great breaths. Tenser smiled.
"You great tattooed ass! No one lays a hand on a prince of the Empire!"
"What?"
Ninefinger Nick asked for all of them.
"I'm an Ursul, and my time with you is done. Kali has come, and I'm afraid she's going to be needing all of you. That is our prayer. Kalivas, Kalivos ras en me, Kali me virtu rapt, recu virtum defite.
Kali come, Kali live in me, Kali take this my offering, the strength of those who oppose you. A prayer that is answered today. Kali is now a holer. You will live in her holy presence. It is a great honor, though I confess, not one highly sought.
Above, Logan heard the sound of what could only be wagon wheels reach the third level of the mall.
Why are you here?
Nick asked.
That doesn't concern you, though it is my doing that we're all still here.
Tensor was smiling like this was the best thing that had ever happened to him.
What?
Nick asked.
You bastard! Lily said. You made the key not fit the lock. You knocked it out of my hand. You summoned Gorky, you fuck!
Yes, 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 Tensor laughed. He held a hand out, and a red light burst from it. The holers shrank back, blinking eyes that hadn't seen light in months. The red light floated up through the bars high above. Far down the hall, someone cried out, seeing the light. Behind Tensor, Finn picked up a loop of his rope.
Don't even think of it, Tensor said. He grinned ghoulishly. Besides, Kali's presence won't mean death for all of you. You, Finn, you may do very well in her service. The rest of you will do well to follow his example.
An old man shuffled into sight above the bars. The grate flipped open, and Logan recognized Nef Dada. Before the Verdmeister could see him, Logan scooted into his little niche. Tensor rose through the air gently as the Verdmeister's magic lifted him. He laughed all the way. The grate slammed shut, and Logan poked his head out. A spotlight of red light blinded him, pinned him in place.
Oh, Tensoror Sul said. And don't think I've forgotten you, King. I can't wait to tell my father that I found Logan Gyre hiding in the deepest depths of his own dungeon. He'll love it!